Chapter 14. Meeting My Family. The morning was cold, and the powdery, wind-blown snow was left over from the night before. Soria and Brannis had decided not to push themselves too hard the previous night, preferring a tent in the plains over an uncertain welcome at Hinterdale Farm. They rode slowly and in no great hurry. Brannis had more pressing matters weighing upon his thoughts than meeting Kyrus's kin. "When will you be able to bring that book to me?" Brannis asked. They were riding a horse's width apart, but the wind and noise of the hooves had them nearly shouting to one another.
"I ran into some difficulty just a short while ago. I may be a few days delayed in returning to Cadrus," she replied. Have things been going well back home?"
Rashan started doling out positions among the inner circle.
"So you're one of them now, I suppose?"
"No, I declined," Brannis said. "I have a position outside the circle. I have no need of their intrigues nipping at my ankles wherever I go."
"But won't Rashan take offense? You're nearly goading him to hate you, don't you see it? By remaining outside the circle, you outrank him as the Emperor's proxy."
"I had not considered that. The last thing I want is to put myself at odds with him."
"No, the last thing you want is him knowing. We're going to some trouble to put you at odds with him. By the by, did you even try looking for another copy of the Peace of Talax?"
"A bit, but I had more pressing plans. I convinced Rashan to find a way to end the war with Safshan and save face. I still do not see how they will think less of us, or see it as weakness if Rashan grows bored of slaughtering them. I waited for him to depart Cadrus and went to meet with the Demon King of Azat," Brannis said.
"What?"
Soria screamed.
"I assume that since you did not wake me this morning screaming in pain and terror that you lived through the night. But that was just plain stupid of you. You walked right into a trap, or would have if it had been one."
"But it wasn't. I just might need to stop worrying so much about my own safety and think of everyone else. Have you any idea the number of people Rashan has killed? I'm doing all I can to rein him in, and I might need some reining myself. I found out by report that there were 18 men still in the army's headquarters when I leveled it. Only 2 survived their injuries. I'm pushing myself so hard to be ready for a conflict with Rashan that I'm beginning to be as bad as he is."
"Intent matters. You can't knot yourself up over a mistake, or you'll stop taking risks. You're as good a man as I know, Brannis, and I'll take your mistakes over most men's intentions," Soria told him.
Brannis looked over to her. Her face was flushed from the wind and cold, and her hair was blowing loose behind her. He could not help but think how different she looked, bundled in furs against the wintry autumn weather, from all the preening women of the Emperor's court, and even her peers among the circle. Juliana's peers. This is Soria, after all. Brannis found himself forgetting that more and more often. "I hope to live up to your confidence. I wish I shared it. I worry that if I manage to stop Rashan..." Brannis shook his head. There was no point in avoiding putting a name to his purpose. "To kill Rashan. That I will end up turning out just like him. He always maintains that he's acting for the good of the Empire. Do I believe so differently?" Soria pulled hard on her reins, drawing her horse up short. Brannis followed suit, stopping a few lengths ahead of her. She walked her horse up next to his.
"Stop that, right now. That's the last I want to hear of you being anything like Rashan Soloran. The similarities are superficial. He started his career by killing his own grandfather, if you remember. He starts wars because it lets him run loose among the sheep. It lets him have his fun and gets everyone to respect and fear him. You're putting yourself between his jaws to stop him, risking everything to save the lives of half the world. If you can't see the difference between trying to save lives and playing at ending them, you're not half as smart as I thought you were."
"I know, but..." Their horses were within arm's reach of one another. Soria leaned over and shoved Brannis hard. Brannis was caught off guard. His feet pulled loose of the near stirrup and he fell face first into the snow.
"What was that for?" Brannis shouted.
He brushed snow from his hair and eyes, the cold of it burning against his bare skin.
"I told you I wasn't having any more of that nonsense. If you were Rashan, you'd have killed me for that, Right there ought to be enough of a difference between you. You want answers. He wants excuses to kill.
Brennis stood, working a sore shoulder and elbow. For the most part, the snow had cushioned his fall. Brennis led his horse a pace or two away from Soria's before he mounted once again. Snow had gotten into his boots and up under his tunic, wetting him to the skin. It was going to be a long ride before they found the warmth of Hinterdale Farm.
"Remind me again why I love you," Brennis joked.
"Because I'm the one who's willing to knock sense into you when you need it. The rest of them would rather lie to you and leave you miserable," she replied.
A mischievous smile spread slowly on her face, and Brennis realized she was not looking him in the eye. He quickly ran a hand through his hair to smooth it down, and brushed away more of the snow that clung to him. He brought his horse alongside Soria's. When he leaned across, she never showed a sign of flinching, trusting that he was not seeking petty vengeance for his time in the snow. They shared a brief kiss before setting off once more. Brennis smiled. "I hope I never understand you." Hinterdale Farm was a quaint patch of countryside nestled west of Scar Harbor. It was situated far enough inland that the smells of sea and city never reached it. The nearest neighbors were the Gulroy family, whose lands lay on the other side of a low stone wall that ran between a pair of pastures, but neither farmhouse was in view of the other, nor either barn. It gave the area a feeling of isolation that was by stretches either idyllic or desolate. In the snowy months, it more often seemed the latter.
"Don't your folks keep animals or anything?" Soria asked as they approached. "It looks deserted."
"Cows dislike the cold as well, you know. They get out for exercise, but it takes little prodding to get them back into the barn in this weather. Same goes for the chickens. The old plow mule, Buckles, is too dumb to come in on his own, but they keep a watch out for him. Look, though, there is smoke from the chimney. They must be home," Brennis said, as if Kyrus's family was ever anywhere else aside from on market days.
"Do they have a stable for our horses?" Soria asked. They were inside of the age-grade barn and the farmhouse, but those were the only two structures to be seen, aside from a covered well.
"No, we can put them up in the barn. Horses cost good money, and we never had it to spare. Buckles did all the work we would have used a horse for, except riding."
The two of them rode down to the barn. As they drew closer, they could hear the periodic chock, chock, chock of someone on the far side splitting firewood.
"Hello!" Brennis called out.
The chopping stopped, and a moment later a man emerged from behind the barn. He was underdressed for the cold, with neither jacket nor cloak, and just a pair of tall boots indicating any concession to the snow. Steam rose from his sweat-stained shirt and puffed with each breath. He carried an axe slung over his shoulder.
"What hey? Who's that there?" the man shouted back.
"Keaton, it's me," Brennis called to him. "I haven't been gone so long you don't recognize your own brother, have I?"
He caught Soria's bemused expression with a quick glance. They had not discussed whether they would play at their ruse of names, but Brennis wanted to see Kyrus's family, not visit them as a stranger.
"Kyrus, that you? Ha!"
Keaton Hinterdale sunk his axe into a stump and ambled over to meet them. He was a square-built man, stocky, broad-shouldered, and thick-limbed. Brennis dismounted to wrap his older brother in a hug. Keaton came only to Brennis's jaw.
"Hey, hey, you've got some meat on you now. Maybe we can put you to some proper work around here for once."
Soria climbed down from her horse as well.
"Soria Hinterdale, nice to meet you, Keaton."
She pulled a glove off and offered him a hand. Keaton stood looking puzzled at her.
"This yours?" Keaton asked, jerking a thumb in Soria's direction.
Brennis nodded with a smile.
"Well, bowl me over. Another sister."
Keaton ignored the proffered hand and crushed Soria in a hug. The big man laughed.
"Oh, just let me get your horses in the barn and bring you to see Ma and Pa."
"I can get some of that wood for you in the meantime if you want," Brennis offered.
"Sure, thanks, Kai," Keaton said.
He pulled the axe from the stump and offered it to Brennis, handle first. Keaton then took the reins of both horses and led them to the barn,
You know anything about chopping wood? Soria asked in a whisper as she followed him around back.
Kyrus was always awful at it. They stopped letting him try years ago. I always wanted to be good at it, but they were too worried I would get hurt, Brennus whispered back. The pile of wood was half split, the rest stacked under a tarp against the wet of snow. Brennus picked a solid log from amid the wood pile and set it down on the much-abused stump that served as the Hinterdale's chopping block.
Thuck!
The axe bit deep but did not split the log. It also did not want to pull out again. With a heave, Brennus lifted the log using the axe as a handle for it. He hoisted it high and slammed both back down once more, shearing the log in two. His face broke out in a childish grin.
Oh, yes, mighty woodsman ye, Soria joked, watching him with her arms crossed and a look that seemed at once both resigned and amused.
Been wanting to do that for years, Brennus said. I never managed it before.
Kyrus, of all the things you've done of late, that is the one that you're proud of?
Soria asked, shaking her head. Brennus shrugged.
Let me see one of those.
Soria moved to the woodpile and picked out one of the larger logs. She could do little more than walk it over to the stump, rocking it back and forth because she could not lift it.
Want a hand with...
Brennus began, but caught a glare and put up his hand in surrender.
Soria worked the log up onto the stump. Brennus proffered the axe, but she waved it off. Soria tucked her gloves into her belt. She laced her fingers, pressing the tips against the waiting log. With a sudden burst, she drove her fingers into the wood and ripped the log in two. The two halves fell away to the side as a low whistle came from the corner of the barn.
Mighty impressive, Keaton said. Don't know that I had a mind to mischief, mind you, but I have less of one now.
It's all in the technique. Where I grew up, they didn't let little girls use axes.
Keaton led them into the house. The porch floor creaked with each step. The door fit askew with the jam. Brennus's nose was not quite able to put a name to the odor, but it stank of musk and cold. Inside was a bit better. The bubbling of something on the stove reminded Brennus of the long winters Kyrus had spent as a child, stuck indoors to escape the coldest days.
Ma, Pa, it's Kyrus come home, Keaton shouted.
Brennus and Soria followed him in.
Washing hung on lines was strung up by the fireplace.
Two large, gangly dogs that had been lying in front of the fire perked up and lumbered for the door to greet the visitors.
Scratcher, big boy, how are you, boys?
Brennus asked the dogs as they attacked him in a joyous reunion.
They know me. Even the dogs can't tell me and Kyrus apart.
Ah, Scoot, you've seen him before.
Keaton shooed the dogs away. Or tried to, at least. They were intent on getting Soria's scent, and no amount of scolding or shoving could dissuade them. She got down on a knee and let them sniff and lick at her.
All right, now get. You had your fun.
Kyrus, is that really you?
Ma Hinterdale asked as she entered the room. She was a taller woman, near to Soria's height, with scraggly gray hair pulled into a bun at the back of her head.
Hello, Ma. Been too long, Brennus said.
It was a new light that he saw her in, knowing that 23 years ago she had betrayed her husband to conceive him.
I'd like you to meet Soria. Soria, this is my mother.
Kyrus, you've got a girl? Ma Hinterdale asked.
No, Ma, they're married, Keaton explained.
Neither Brennus nor Soria made any attempt to correct the misconception they had worked so carefully to concoct. Ma Hinterdale's hand went to cover her gaping mouth.
Kyrus, you never... Oh, my dear, let me have a look at you.
Dogs underfoot, the old woman came up to Soria and looked her over like a horse at the fair. Brennus saw Soria tense as Kyrus's mother took her chin in hand. She then took Soria's hands and looked them over as well.
Common laborer, though she's had a gentle time of it mostly. What is it you do, dear? Lady's maid, potter, seamstress. Those hands of yours have seen real use, but you look well kept.
Coinblade, Soria replied, smirking as the woman, who was purported to be her oath mother, recoiled.
"Kairos, what sort of woman are you bringing around here?" Ma Hinterdale demanded.
"It figures he'd be mixin'," a voice came from the far doorway, where Pa Hinterdale stood, sucking on the end of a battered pipe. He looked every bit of an elderly Keaton, tall but not so tall as Brannis, wide shoulders and thick arms. His jawline was accentuated as he gritted his teeth around the pipe.
"Figures he'd fall in with pirate types. Figures he'd marry him some whore and sneak."
Brannis could abide many slights, but his father's casual venom towards Soria was too much. He started across the room for Pa Hinterdale, only to have Keaton bar his way. Keaton had often taken Kairos's side as a boy, doing chores for him when he grew tired, or did them poorly in his carelessness. But Keaton had always kept Kairos in his place as well, roughing him up whenever he saw the need. Keaton still had an advantage of heft on Brannis, but now there existed nowhere near the same disparity as there once had been between Keaton and his true half-brother. As Keaton put his hands onto Brannis's chest to push him back, Brannis laid his own forearm across Keaton's collarbone. He had leverage and knew he could force his way past Kairos's brother, but allowed himself to be restrained.
"I didn't come back here for this," Brannis snapped. "I came to see how the family fared, and let you know that I wasn't all they claimed. Looks like I needn't have bothered."
Soria snickered softly behind him. Brannis whipped his head around to see what could possibly have amused her at a time like that.
"Sorry," she told him. "I'll explain it later."
She had dropped all pretense of disguising her Keshi accent, he noticed.
"Get out, then. We're faring just fine. That slaggard Harwick's already been and told us all, months back. Even tried to buy us quiet. But he ain't buying my opinion out of me. Get gone. Be you witch or pirate or both. Don't you bring that harlot back, neither."
Brannis followed Soria out the door, slamming it shut with a crack behind him.
Did he know all these years that I wasn't his? Was this just father's excuse, blaming Soria?
Keaton followed them out, muttering apologies for their father. But he did nothing to dissuade them from leaving as he helped them retrieve their horses. As the two of them rode away, Brannis calmed enough to ask Soria what she had found so amusing during his argument with his father.
"You," she answered. "You slipped back into some country yokel dialect of Akkadian, probably what Kairos spoke as a boy in that house. You actually started a bit earlier in the day, but I didn't say anything about it. I just figured it was the thought of home. Then I realized that even though you still aren't completely convinced you're Kairos, you just started speaking with an accent that you never used in your life."
Brannis frowned, but found that he could not keep with it. To his chagrin, he smiled, forced to admit to himself that, yes, it was funny. It was early evening when they reached Scar Harbor. The brief stay at the Hinterdale farm had been far briefer than their guesses.
"You're in a foul mood already. Want to just go see Lord Harwick tonight?" Soria asked. "I mean, what news could he have that would upset you further?"
"Aside from blaming me for Caladris's death and trying to exact revenge on the spot, I suppose not much. I already know his sad tale, and the retelling cannot be much worse, I would imagine."
"That's the spirit," Soria said to him.
She laughed and trotted on ahead of him. Brannis followed her, feeling reckless taking his horse so fast on crowded city streets. The ride to Thomas Harwick's manor house was not a long one. A servant at the gate told him that they were expected and took their horses with no fuss. When Brannis asked about Lord Harwick, the man just shook his head and would not meet his eye.
"There you are, blast you!"
Lord Harwick bellowed down from the upstairs landing upon their arrival.
"Get up to my study. This cannot wait."
Lord Harwick disappeared down the hallway. Soria and Brannis exchanged a wary glance before following after him. They caught up with him in his study. Lord Harwick was already slouched back in his chair,
a bottle of some clear liquor clenched in one hand.
With the other, he shoved a piece of paper across the desk at them.
"Read this," he ordered.
Lord Harwick then took a long pull from the bottle.
"What is it?" Brannis asked.
Harwick waved for him to just read it, not so much as taking his mouth away from the bottle. "The Honorable Thomas Harwick, being that you are of most prestigious and respectable lineage, being that you are of moral and ethical good standing, being that you are of sound judgment and admirable intellect, I hereby request with all humility that you would accept a position that would do honor to my family and my people." Brennus skimmed a while, taking note that most of it seemed to follow a very legalistic form, though not of Accardian cadence. The hand that wrote it knew Accardian script well enough, though, and the calligraphy was professional. It was signed at the end. "The office of Her Highness, Princess Fionn Chilla's daughter."
"What's the trouble?" Brennus asked. "It looks like they want Thomas for an ambassador to Kesh. This would be a real coup for a man of his age."
Brennus felt odd referring to the youth of a man who was 8 summers his elder, but it was true. Ambassadorships were typically granted to old pensioners of the army, or noblemen who never inherited.
"The trouble! I received the letter this morning. That is the trouble," Lord Harwick said. "But Thomas was kidnapped last night while I was down at the society for a few drinks and a game of chess."
"I am sure the Keshi will understand."
"The Keshi are the ones who took him."
Lord Harwick thrust himself from his chair and stalked the room, bottle in hand.
"The letter is a leash about my neck so that I can neither pursue him nor make a proper complaint to the Keshi embassy. We've been outmaneuvered."
"Outmaneuvered by who?" Soria asked. "What would anyone want with Thomas?"
"Rashaan, it has to be," Lord Harwick said,
closing his eyes and shaking his head. His eyes opened and fixed on Brennus, who could see dark bags beneath the bloodshot whites of his eyes. Lord Harwick took a step closer to him, and Brennus could also see that his late uncle's twin had not shaved. The stink of whiskey on his breath came as no surprise, but it threatened to turn Brennus's stomach.
"What happened?"
"You mean after... Rashaan..."
Brennus stumbled through the words.
"Yes, after he killed me," Lord Harwick said.
There was a trapped look in his eyes, which seemed to flit about, looking for some escape from his head.
"Brennus, the other morning I awoke screaming. Scared my butler out of a year's life. Vaedrus was gone in an instant. I still know it is there, like a man with a missing leg who still feels an ache in it. I never asked my brother what it was like when he died there. It seemed a morbid, thoughtless thing to ask. I wish I had, because I have not slept since. I know I cannot hold out forever, but I do not want to see the nothingness that must greet me next."
Brennus shook his head. He had no answers for the questions to which Lord Harwick most wanted answers, but he could provide what he knew. "Rashaan killed most of the inner circle. Your loyal assistant sold your secret to Rashaan to avoid marrying you once Aunt Ferena died."
"Did you flee?" Lord Harwick asked. "Did you drive him off? What happened when he turned on you?"
"He did not, or at least he has not yet," Brennus admitted.
"You mean you did nothing?" Harwick demanded. "You sat there like a dragon on high, able to shift the balance of power in that chamber at a whim, and just watched."
"I protected the Emperor. Our plans had always envisioned attacking Rashaan from ambush, catching him at a moment when he was off his balance. Being caught on the wrong end of his ambush was the worst time to reveal myself. I would be right here alongside you, crying into a bottle." Brennus was unsure of the latter. However bleak things had looked before, he had never sought refuge in the bottle, but he was beginning to wonder whether Lord Harwick had gone mad in the wake of Caladrius's death, and how much blame he might throw Brennus's way. Lord Harwick was still a formidable sorcerer.
"You are probably right," Lord Harwick admitted.
He sighed and wiped his brow with a sleeve, his bottle of gin angling dangerously toward spilling its contents.
"You need to find another chance to kill him. I will give you anything I can to help. You can study on the way."
Lord Harwick set the bottle down and took a key from his pocket. "On the way where?" Soria asked. "We just got back."
"To Kesh,"
Lord Harwick replied as he fumbled with the lock of his desk drawer.
"Your ship, the Poet's Hammer, leaves with the morning tide."
You already booked passage for us? Brennus asked. How did you know we would be back? We left no itinerary for our visits.
The tide waits for no man, but the ships can be held to the next. The captain may well be inconvenienced, but I have the authority to hold ships in port. He should be grateful to have his leave to sail on the morrow.
How has Abelay taken his disappearance? Brennus asked. He felt Soria's glare on him without having to look her way.
She was taken as well. It looked as if they were made to pack in some haste, or someone packed many of their belongings, Lord Harwick said. We have been outmaneuvered badly, I am afraid. I think that Rashan may have had more agents in Tellarac than I had realized. I had thought I was his only substantive contact.
What can he want by this? If he wanted to kill you here as well, why not just be about it? No offense, of course. Rather than involving your son, Brennus asked. It makes no sense.
I can only imagine that it is a hedge against you. He still believes that he has you by Abelay's leash. If he takes her, he can ensure that you cannot act against him without losing her, Lord Harwick said.
He turned towards Soria, cutting her off as she seemed about to protest Abelay's irrelevance.
I know as well as you that Abelay is not the deterrent Rashan would like to think she is. That is not what matters here. What matters is that two innocents, my son among them, are about to be kept as pawns by some Keshi princess toward ends they have no say in. I lack the capacity to hunt after them. I leave them to you.
Why should we? Soria asked. You got them involved in this. He's your son. You got the girl involved to snare Kyrus and caught Brennus instead. He's slipped that net, though, and he's with me now. We don't have to do anything at all about this. Complain to the king and get his help with the Keshi.
This is where it grows complicated. I have lost control of the flow of information. Rashan has another contact. He must. I have no further link to Vaedrus besides you, but I need you here to act. Whoever is behind these Keshi dealings is working with Rashan and Vaedrus. If you can trace them, maybe you can find a way to twist them back to our side and betray him. That is always the risk with plots between worlds. The same absolute secrecy works both ways.
Lord Harwick managed to open his desk drawer and draw out a stack of papers, piling them in front of him. He turned to look at something among the shelves.
What is all this? All that I had been planning to teach you. There may be no time for it now. You are no threat to me any longer in Vaedrus, so you might as well have them. You managed a transference spell on your own, so I doubt you need my hand-holding over the basics of them. You will just have to settle for painting portraits with an axe head without my guidance. At least I will not have to witness your shoddy spells.
Harwick turned with the last little jest to display a smile. He wobbled a bit, holding onto the bookcase with one hand to steady himself. He found a handful of scroll cases and began stuffing the notes into them. Brennus cringed as drunken fingers mashed the valuable documents into the tubes. He took up a case and helped fill it to limit the damage.
Learn this stuff, Brennus, as much as you can. Hang me if I know any weakness that bastard has, but I think maybe you could face him head on if you just get enough practice. Promise me he will send word if it comes to combat between you. I must know if he is dead or if you fail.
I will, Brennus promised.
Get going now, both of you. You have a lot of packing to do before your ship departs. 7 bells tomorrow. He dare not leave without you, but I cannot bear any delays. A half day may make the difference of Thomas's life.
Where is Brennus? Rakashi asked when he saw her.
Hi, Soria, I'm alive. Might have been a nicer greeting, you know. Since you don't have that haunted look in your eye that Lord Harwick does, I can only imagine you're either alive or made of much sterner stuff than the old buzzard, Soria replied.
Can it not be both? Rakashi asked. Yes, and by most strange agency. Come in and sit. We may be a while.
Can you tell the quick version? Soria asked, following him into the small house he rented. Brennus and I just got pulled into another job and are sailing in the morning. I need to help him pack, or I'm liable to find myself with nothing but dresses and what I'm wearing right now. We're on the Poet's Hammer,
obviously a Keshi vessel, sailing at 7 tomorrow morning. Book your passage and come along. You can catch me up on the long version then.
Well, for now you must know this. I faced Roshan in a mockery of battle, but I impressed him enough that he spared me a sure death by his ether, and offered me a deal instead, Rikashi said.
Soria had been wrong initially. There was indeed a look in that single uncovered eye, a bit too wide, perhaps, for his normal look. What sort of deal? Soria said. She tried to work into those few words just how much distaste she held for Roshan's deals.
He has me at the end of one of his infamous bargains.
Roshan grinned. Excellent! I have a task for you. I would like you to find and kill the twin of Brannis Solaran, Roshan said. His manner was no more grave than if he had asked for Teba to fetch him a particular vintage of wine. An image sprang up, no doubt at the demon's bidding. It showed a likeness of Brannis. Teba had not met Kyrus Hinterdale, but if there was any difference in appearance between the two, the image was clearly of the one who now traveled alongside Soria. You can find him traveling in the company of a female coinblade, Roshan explained. He's nearly a head taller than you, built like a blacksmith, and armed with rune-forged armor and blade.
The blade is unstoppable except by extraordinary means,
and Brannis's style of fighting is not so different from what I first showed against you. His armor will stop nearly any blow so long as its magic holds. I would caution as well against moving against him with the woman nearby. She is Tezuan-trained and likely to be nearly as deadly.
I find it also quite likely that she might also come seeking vengeance.
I am no murderer, Teba protested, mouth hanging open, aghast.
Ah, but you see, I am. I give you until the 1st of summer, a quarter of a season from now. On the 2nd of summer, I come back and finish what I have started here in Safshan. Or I come back and find that you have killed him. Do you understand?
I do, Teba said.
He hung his head, and in a quieter voice repeated,
I do.
Teba did not look up, but felt the typhoon of ether that drew toward the demon before his spell whisked him from Safshan.
All too well, I do.
Soria crossed her arms, unimpressed with the tale. I think you would be pressed to harm Brannis even if you could get to him. By all accounts, he's leveling buildings by accident, and surviving the sort of blast that can cause that damage. Runeblade or no, I can't see your...
You misunderstand. Brannis, not Kyrus. Roshan knows the difference. The man you rode into Scar Harbor with today. For some reason, Roshan is willing to pay me the lives of all my people for his blood.
Soria pulled away from Akashi. Her hands flinched toward her back where her daggers rested before she stopped herself. What did you tell him?
Tell him? Rikashi asked, incredulous. It was an ultimatum. He did not even wait a response.
But surely you can't...
Kill Brannis? Do you mean the moral or the practical sense? The better question is, what choice do I have? Can I weigh one life against the lives of all my people? I would gladly give my own, but that was not the demon's price.
I won't let you, Soria replied. The steel in her voice had never been directed in Rikashi's direction before. He found himself shrinking back from her.
I need an alternative.
We can tell Brannis and...
Have him kill me? Rikashi asked.
Brannis already has doubts about me fighting on the other side of his war. And what then? Fake his death? Ask Kyrus to lie to a demon whose place in history is king of lies? Who said Roshan keeps his word, even if you...
Soria trailed off, unable to say the words, kill Brannis.
She swallowed. He's not known for keeping bargains.
A better point, which leads me to my suggestion. You must ensure Kyrus confronts Roshan before the 1st day of summer. It is the only way to be sure.
What if he isn't ready by then?
Make him ready. The 1st of summer is not far off.
Fine, Soria relented. But you need to promise not to harm Brannis. We'll figure out another way, whether Kyrus kills Roshan or not.
So long as you keep the secret of how Iridan died,
I will defend myself if he finds out and seeks vengeance.
Soria nodded. Deal.